Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Hello and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 289. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today is Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry.
Hey, Valerie. On today's show, we got a number of questions, back to answering questions, and we're going to cover questions about whether a shower head filter can help you with hair color retention, whether polyethylene is in cleansing balms is an environmental hazard, whether hair shampoo and laundry detergent are the same, whether Jamaican black castor oil can really make your hair grow, and how well does the Goldwell Illumin hair color technology work? I know, Valerie, you are one of the industry's foremost expert on hair color, so
I am called the hair color queen.
And I hope you got that on Instagram or something. Got to snag that one. All right, before we get to the questions and to the beauty science news, Valerie, let's do some of our highly anticipated chit-chat. You know, Valerie, my left arm is in pain right now.
What happened?
I donated blood.
Wow, how many times is that? This is a list you keep, right? Sounding familiar.
Well, I make it a point to donate blood 3 times a year. It's one of my goals. So I like to knock one out in January and then another one in the early spring and or the late spring and then in the fall after I do a marathon. So
nice. How many times total have you donated blood? Have you counted that?
I have donated blood 60 times. So I've been doing it for a while.
Wow, pretty good.
Yeah. But you know what? It was very crowded today at the blood bank. I had an 11 o'clock appointment, and they didn't start taking my blood until noon. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a good sign.
It is. It is. Or a bad sign because all their employees had COVID and couldn't come into work. So, you know.
Or I think they're doing a great job getting people to come in because I was at the hospital and they have a little sign saying, at least in Los Angeles, there's a critical blood shortage of certain blood types.
Uh-huh.
And it's like literally on the computer monitors for them to ask patients to donate. And maybe that's it.
Yeah.
But it's probably the COVID thing.
Well, I think they've gotten better at the online marketing, too. I mean, they sent me an email, and that's why I went. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, my goal. Thank you.
Exactly. And I wanted to check my cholesterol. And you know what? You donate blood, you get a free cholesterol check.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, indeed. So if you can, go donate blood. And please, people, also consider getting COVID vaccinated.
Yep.
All right, Valerie, you got anything you want to chat about?
Well, it really falls in the line of beauty science news. Should we head there?
Oh, yeah. Let's head right on over there. All right, beauty science news or more chit-chat. What do you got, Valerie?
Oh, my gosh. I've been waiting to tell you all week. There's another celebrity who's just announced the launching of her line.
Oh, wait, already? Didn't we predict? This is like one of our predictions already.
I know, and it's already came true. And there was actually one last week, but I was on a bunch of medicine last week,
okay,
so I can't
sure.
remember who I saw. But I do remember the one that I read about yesterday, Martha Stewart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel like you so predicted this. And Martha Stewart has just announced the launch of her CBD topical line.
Wow, a CBD topical line.
And she's wearing this like ridiculous puffer vest.
Is she
the
doing
photograph
it in,
of her lunch?
Is she doing it in conjunction with Snoop Dogg?
Wouldn't that be cool? I probably wouldn't have CBD in there. I'd probably have THC in there.
No,
but
that's right.
I was just browsing cosmetic news and I saw it and I was like, oh my God, I have to tell Perry. And there was one last week too I read, but I really am trying to figure out where I saw it and I just can't. I just know that there was another celebrity launch. So we're on track to hit all of our predictions.
We are on fleek, as the kids say, right?
No, I don't think they say that anymore. That was like 10 years ago.
Well, you know, I did hear some news about Pete Davidson, who I predicted would have a beauty line. He doesn't have a beauty line, but he's got more bodyguards now because I don't know, he had some disturbing tweets from Kanye or something. So.
Oh, but, my gosh.
But I'm still holding out hope. He's going to have a beauty line this year.
Oh, my gosh. If I can help make this happen, Pete, if you're listening to the show, let me know. I doubt he's listening to the show.
Well, you never know. Well, you know.
I wonder if we have any celebrities who listen to the show.
Huh. Well, if you are a celebrity,
do you think we do?
Tweet at the Beauty Brains and let us know.
We're celebrity cosmetic chemists, right?
In our industry, we're quite famous, yeah.
Yeah, but any celebrities, let us know. We'd love to know your ears are tuning in.
Indeed. Well, you know what? I did see TikTok and cosmetic industry crashing in the news. There is this trend. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's an experiment, really, on TikTok, and it's where the you take an apple, you slice it up, and you know how when you do that, an apple will brown. And I guess apparently there are some TikTok viral videos which involve this sliced apple, where there's this active vitamin C, or you can tell whether the vitamin C in your product is active or not. So you slice the apple, cover it with the product.
Yeah, I've seen this.
Yeah, you see if it turns brown.
Do you know where this comes from?
No, what's that?
I'm not talking about the people who made it, because that's a whole different conversation about to get into. But it comes from when you cut apples or fruit that tends to brown like that. Squeeze lemon juice on the fruit to help prevent the browning reaction from occurring. And I'm thinking, people are thinking, lemons, vitamin C, product, vitamin C, should do the same thing.
Right.
That's the thought process I think people are going through here. And, you know, it doesn't really work like that.
Well, there is some logic to it. Now, I saw this in a Bustle article, bustle.com.
Their title was
Their title was "A Cosmetic Chemist Explains the TikTok Viral Vitamin C Test." And I'm like, wow, well, I wonder what this cosmetic chemist had to say. And then I looked and I'm reading it, and they had actually interviewed an actual cosmetic chemist. I mean, the expert that they quote, he's actually worked in a lab for a big company. I know him. I mean, he has the bona fides, right? But anyway, I just want to point out something that was missed in his explanation.
Okay.
Nothing that he said was wrong, but the fact that he didn't say, there's stuff he didn't say, and one of the things he didn't say is that this is a terrible test. I mean, it's so incredibly misleading that it's pretty much useless for consumers, right?
Yeah, it's neat to see if it works. I bet you there's a lot of people doing it and it doesn't work, and that doesn't mean vitamin C is not in the product, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, to understand this, it's helpful to explain why the apples turn brown in the first place. Now,
okay,
this really happens because of what's called enzymatic browning. So enzymes, these polyphenol oxidase enzyme, or PPO, it oxidizes some phenolic compounds that are naturally in the apple. And those compounds then react with the amino acids and proteins in the apple to make the brown color. So it's a two-step process.
So it's kind of like the fruit version of the Maillard reaction, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Maillard reaction, but it requires an enzyme to get that browning effect, et cetera. So this enzyme, this PPO, it has a pH range at which it works optimally, and that pH range is between 5.0 and 7.0, you know, according to this research paper that I found. Now, below the same research paper looked at, below the pH of 3.0, the enzyme is inactivated, okay? So anything, it turns out anything that's going to reduce the pH of that surface of the apple is going to significantly reduce that browning action. So it doesn't matter what compound is making the pH lower. The important thing is that the pH is lower. So in these vitamin C products, they have the L-ascorbic acid. So that can work. So it really does, prevent the browning. But you know what else works? Citric acid, hydrochloric acid, acetic acid, or vinegar,
erythorbic acid.
Exactly. Any acid that you make it. So this demonstration is really easily fooled, and it's just showing you not a demonstration of the activity of the vitamin C in your product. It's just showing you a demonstration of what's the pH of your cream.
Yeah.
Now, there was a 10-year-old study in the Journal of Drugs and Dermatology, and they looked at the pH of a number of different moisturizers, and there was a range, so they just took things on the market and looked at them, and there was a range of anywhere pH 3.7 to pH of 8.2, and most of them are formulated between 4 and 6. So pretty much any lotion that has the lower side of a pH is going to slow down that browning reaction. And then ones with a higher pH are going to be more brown. So,
yeah.
Now, one of the things, if you want to do this experiment yourself and just verify what we're saying, go get an apple. Now you can get a Macintosh or a Granny Smith or a Golden Delicious.
Pink Lady. Those are really tart and nice. Yeah.
Really? I haven't had a Pink Lady.
Yeah, Pink Ladies are good.
Sure, that's not a martini. Anyway.
Could also be a martini.
So I don't know what the pH of a lot of the are, but I know like the pH of Olay or Jergens moisturizing lotions, that pH is around 5 or 5.5. So you spread some of that on your apple, and you know what's going to happen at that pH? It's going to brown, right? Now, just mix a little bit of vinegar in with your lotion and then try that. So that's going to bring the pH down to that sample and see what happens to that brown apple. It's just going to not turn brown as fast. I haven't worked out the ratios or whatever, but, you know, just try that yourself.
You're missing an important step, Perry.
What is that?
Eat the apple afterwards.
Yum.
Just kidding. No, the next important step is throw the apple away. Do not try to eat it.
You know, it's funny. I should have mentioned it in one of our shows. I don't know. I was reading it. And did you know Jessica Simpson had a beauty product line?
Hmm.
Yeah, back when her and Nick Lachey had that TV show.
Wow.
And it got
I didn't know that.
It got discontinued because two people sued because they got sick from it. Somebody got a yeast infection, and somebody had but the whole notion of it was that it was like edible skincare. So,
yeah, not a good idea.
Yeah, don't eat your beauty products, people.
Oh my! I don't want to know about the yeast infection. Oh man. Well, congratulations, TikTok! It looks like you've just discovered a way to determine the pH of your product. Pretty much has nothing to do with level activity of vitamin C. So congrats for
there
that
you go.
Misrepresentation.
Stop wasting apples, people. Valerie, shall we talk about microbes?
Yeah, let's. I love microbes.
Well, I saw this other article, this was in Cosmetic Business, but they found that there are microbes that are evolving to eat plastics, according to this study.
Wow. There's been a few studies over the years about this, and it's just incredible to see the research that's being done, and I'm just waiting for it to come into commercial availability. That'd be very interesting. But what did their research find in those most recent study?
Yeah, I think that's what this is. This is all preliminary research, but what they found is that the number of microbial enzymes with the ability to degrade plastics, it's growing, and they're finding a lot more in areas where there's a lot of plastic pollution. A new study from the Chalmers University of Technology in Sweden, published in the Microbial Ecology Journal, they measured samples of environmental DNA from a lot of locations around the globe and discovered that the diversity of plastic degrading enzymes is increasing in direct response to the level of pollution. So that means the number of microbial enzymes or potential enzymes that with the ability to degrade plastic is growing. So there's going to be more options, which raises an interesting possibility for plastic biodegradation and recycling.
Yeah. But I think, you know, obviously a lot more has to be done in terms of studying this. And one thing I don't want listeners to take away with, let me throw it in the LA River.
Right.
The enzymes will get it.
Right. Yeah, that's not happening anytime soon.
I have a feeling they're not getting it fast enough.
Right. Well, what the research did say is that rather than it taking hundreds of years to break down plastic bottles, maybe that it'll take less time than that. But I have to say, even when something's biodegradable, like, say, newspaper is pretty much biodegradable. Mm-hmm. If you go into a landfill and you dig up to the bottom, you're going to find undegraded newspapers from the 1950s. It has to be under the correct conditions for things to biodegrade. So,
yeah, a lot of people think, oh, I'll just put it in the trash. It's biodegradable. It'll decompose. Landfills are entombed. They actually have very little access to oxygen, light, water, all that kind of stuff. So biodegradation, is a very specific set of conditions.
Exactly. So this is promising news, but it's, 10 years away, and maybe it might not do anything. So still the biggest thing you can do to prevent plastic contamination or plastic waste is to stop buying as much products.
Yep.
Which is why we never get any sponsors on this show, quite frankly. What kind of advice is that?
Oh my gosh.
How about we go to some questions? Valerie, our first question comes from Emily from Patreon. Thank you for the support, Emily. She says, "Hi, Brains. I own a hair salon, and I'm pretty obsessed with your podcast. My salon is called The Hair Lab, so I'm obviously a little nerdy about hair chemistry. I have a million questions, but I want to pick your brains about one. What are your thoughts on showerhead filters helping with color retention and any of the other benefits like to skin? We have retailed this one at our salon, but I'm worried I'm peddling pseudoscience. I'd love to know your thoughts." And she gave a link to a hydrogen health product. So, Valerie, what are your thoughts? Is it easy enough to keep your hair color in your hair by just changing out your shower head?
No. I mean, at the end of the day, the thing that helps remove color from hair is water itself. And whether the water is hard water or soft water, it pretty much removes your hair color to a pretty significant degree.
Yeah.
So, if you're really worried about color protection, I wouldn't use a water filter as a means for color protection, especially because of not just the concerns in efficacy that I have, but it's pretty expensive to have a water filter on your shower, especially given the amount of water that has to come through that filter. They get burned out pretty quickly. So it's a really expensive mode, even if it did contribute to color protection. So I would just stick with the old basics of, showering, getting your hair wet less, using a color protective product with amodimethicone, and maybe even using dry shampoo in between washes to help extend the life of your hair, avoid the sun, that kind of stuff. Whether or not you're selling pseudoscience, minerals aren't great for hair or skin, meaning they can contribute to like hair feeling, crunchy or damaged. But there's no way that you're removing all the minerals with this type of shower head. So some are still probably getting through. Minerals are very common in tap water. Unless you have like super duper hard water, I probably would skip it.
Right. I mean, they say it's a high flow rate and, it's always nice to have a powerful shower.
Yeah.
Although I was taking a shower at my sister's house one time and she has this shower head. Must not have been cleaned enough, but the little streams come out like they feel like needles on my skin. It hurts.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. That's not a good thing?
No. No, it hurts.
Oh.
You're like, ah. Ah, boy. So, sometimes you like the low flow so it's trickling down, not like blasting you and exfoliating your skin.
No, I like the blasting.
Well, I'm looking at some of the claims that they have here, and yeah, these seem like, one of them says boost hair growth. Come on. Who are you crapping? It might be a perfectly nice shower filter. Some of the marketing that they're using is a little over the top.
My favorite claim from the shower head is about chlorine. Yes, you can filter out chlorine from water, but when it talks about the explanation of why chlorine's in the water, it says chlorine causes skin irritation, which you know, possibly can. It says, plus breathing chlorine within the shower steam allows this to be absorbed within the entire body.
Wow.
If you are breathing in chlorine, which true chlorine is a gas, by the way.
Yeah.
You're probably dead. I mean, that's not something you want to breathe in. I just thought that was a little funny.
That is a little over the top. So,
yeah.
Interesting product. I'd probably skip it. How about we do an audio question?
Ooh, we haven't had one of those in a while.
Yeah, this one comes to us from Lara.
Hi, Beauty Brains. My name is Lara, and I just wanted to say I absolutely love your podcast. I recently discovered it this month from an Instagram post that Jen from the EcoWell posted, and I've been binging it ever since. And so thank you so much for all the information that you're putting out. I have two questions today, both of which are not related to each other. So the first one is about polyethylene in cleansing balms. So polyethylene is found in most single-use items such as grocery bags and plastic food wrap, etc., and contribute to climate change. So in a way, it does make sense that people are demonizing cleansing balms that have polyethylene in the formulation, treating it as a microplastic. So the question that I have is, since it is a formula that emulsifies upon contact with water, is there a chance that polyethylene in cleansing balms can be an accumulative problem for the environment, or is it something that we shouldn't be too worried about?
Valerie, do you remember us talking about polyethylene before?
I do. A couple episodes, but I don't remember specific ones, but it's something that's come up every once in a while.
Well, Valerie, I look back, because I didn't remember either, but we actually talked about this in episode 254. I encourage you to go check that out.
Me or our audience?
Well, anybody who's curious.
All right. Is it because I couldn't remember, Perry?
No, I'll tell you what. Why don't you have Mr. Cosmetic Chemist go back and listen to it? I'm sure he's heard it, right?
Yeah, you know, he's not doing that.
He's not doing it. I listened to some of it. In that one, we talked about whether polyethylene is a microplastic, and, you know, there's some nuance there. So technically, it's not really a microplastic, but it's considered a microplastic by some. So check that out. But how about this question about whether polyethylene is accumulating in the environment? Well, I looked at this, and there are a number of studies that have been done to see what happens to PE in the environment and whether it's biodegradable or not. And in a paper published in the Journal of Environmental Chemical Engineering back in 2015 called Microbial Degradation of Low-Density Polyethylene, they said that indeed there were bacteria and fungi that can break down low-density polyethylene, just similar to the study that we talked about in the Science News portion. So basically, it can be broken down naturally in the environment. Now, how long that takes or whether it's going to build up, whether we put more in before more gets taken out, I don't think we really know that. So only time will tell. But at least theoretically, it can be broken down. It can be biodegraded. All right, let's go on to her second question.
The second question that I have is about detergents in shampoos. So I remember seeing years ago that Michael Gordon, the creator of Bumble and Bumble, released a new line of hair care called Hair Story. And the new wash shampoo was their first product. I distinctly remember that they said that shampoo has detergents in it, which I've heard the term detergents used on the podcast before in relation to shampoos, and that all shampoos are basically laundry detergents put in a bottle and labeled as hair shampoo. The website advertises that shampoos strip the scalp of its protective oil barrier, which I feel like is the entire point of shampoos in the first place. Your hair is greasy, you wash it with shampoo, then the grease is gone. So my question for that is, what is the determining factor that differentiates laundry detergents from shampoos? Is it the amount of detergents that is used in the formulation, or is there added ingredients that potentially moisturize the hair, but that's usually the conditioner's job anyways? I would love to hear your opinion on both of these topics. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for that question.
You know, good old Hair Story. I always love marketing tactics when people throw in ingredient technology that is used across many industries and say, but this is antifreeze. You know, it's like, well, yeah, because it's a good heat sink. So it's good old marketing. Oh, gosh. But great question.
We have talked about Hair Story in the past, not this question, but I do remember them being brought up. I don't remember the episode. So this is an interesting question, though. We've never covered this on it. It was funny. She mentioned detergents, and I think something people don't understand is that detergent and surfactant, like all detergents are surfactants. Now, not necessarily all surfactants are detergents, but anything that cleans your skin via a surfactant is a detergent. So you're going to find them in laundry detergent, dishwashing. You're going to find it in shampoos,
car soap,
body washes, car soap. Yeah, anywhere where you have to remove oil, you're going to find a detergent or a surfactant, as more generally we call them.
But we don't typically use the term detergent in the beauty industry. So when that term is used by, let's say, a company to imply something is a really harsh cleanser, I think it's a bit misleading because really we're talking about mostly the same chemistries, right? When we're talking about cleansing.
Yeah. As scientists, when I say the word detergent, I specifically mean like a cleansing surfactant. I don't mean detergent like laundry detergent. I think when consumers say detergent, they're thinking, oh, that must be laundry detergent. And I totally get this because when I wasn't in the industry, I thought, say, a body wash is different than a shampoo. They're not really. Not really.
Mm-hmm. I've told the story of me giving my brother a peppermint shampoo, and I had previously told him he could use shampoo for the body.
Right.
And he put it everywhere and then told me I didn't know what I was talking about. Yeah.
Well, thank you, menthol, or methyl salicylate or something like that. Well, I will say this, though. Laundry detergents are different than shampoos. In fact, don't do this. Don't take your laundry detergent and use it in the shower. It's not designed for that. And the biggest difference, there are a number of differences, but the major difference between, say, a laundry detergent and a shampoo is that laundry detergents are based on a surfactant or a detergent called linear alkyl benzene sulfonate, but they're also very highly concentrated. Shampoos, on the other hand, they're based on ingredients like lauryl sulfates or lauryl ether sulfates or alkyl polyglucosides, that sort of thing. So these surfactants are more gentle than the stuff that laundry detergents, but most important is they're also less concentrated. Shampoos typically are going to have, say, 20% detergent and then be 80% water. That's just a rough guess for me.
Now, there are some laundry detergents that maybe claim to be sulfate-free or use a different chemistry than what Perry's talking about with traditional laundry detergent chemistry, but you still also shouldn't use those. And it's not just the concentration aspect, which is a big part of it, but one piece is in the cosmetics industry, we're using grades of materials specific to cosmetics. A lot of household products, car products, laundry detergents, dish detergents, they use maybe more technical grades of raw materials that have different impurities that aren't regulated or tested from a toxicology perspective for use on skin. So that's one reason that you don't want to take any product like dish soap and slather all over your body.
Yeah, absolutely. They're safety testing, for skin and regular use as personal care products hasn't been done with a lot of home care products. So, don't use home care products on your body.
Yeah. And another piece is laundry detergents have things like optical brighteners and things to bleach stains out. And those also may not be skin safe.
And they specifically have defoamers in them. Like when you don't want a lot of foam in your laundry detergent, right? Remember that episode of The Brady Bunch?
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah. Why can't I ever make that happen?
You see, that makes my heart smile a little bit because I thought that was way out of your generation. But
I used to watch The Brady Bunch on reruns.
Oh. I used to watch it live, but it was Friday nights. But anyway, there's an episode where they put in too much detergent or something and it just foams up. So shampoos, you want foam. Detergents, laundry detergents, you don't want foam. And so they specifically put in defoaming ingredients, probably some sort of silicone or something in there. So you don't get the foam. And anyway, the whole notion that laundry detergents or shampoos are just laundry detergents in a bottle, a different bottle, that's completely BS. Now, Body wash, on the other hand, and shampoos, they're pretty similar. So they're not exactly the same in all cases, but yeah, they are interchangeable. But laundry detergent and shampoo are not.
Our next question comes to us from Giovannia. Giovannia asks, does Jamaican black castor oil really make your hair grow? Some people say only use peppermint oil, argan oil, jojoba oil. I know that many of these brands are black owned and it's about supporting a community. However, I am still skeptical. What is your take on this? I hope you answer this on your podcast as well. I have turned many of my friends and coworkers onto it. It's been a huge life changer for us. Thanks for the great show.
Well, I'm glad we're making an impact.
Yeah. Well, Perry, I know you were published in a beauty magazine within the last couple of years talking about castor oil and hair growth.
Wow, I was? Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I answer a lot of reporter questions.
We do,
And it's funny. You get a reporter will contact you, and then you brush up on a specific question. You answer it, and then you forget who you talked to. But we did cover, I think we covered this in the Beauty Brains way early on about castor oil and hair growth.
Probably. Yeah, it's been around for a long time as something that people do think makes your hair grow back. And I want to first talk about her specific reference to Jamaican black castor oil. Do you know what that is?
I do not. No, I don't know that one.
Yeah. So this actually, Giovannia, is where I think you are supporting a community. And I'm not talking about the small brands that are using this ingredient, but I'm talking down to the community level in Jamaica where these castor beans are grown and processed according to tradition. So don't think about the brand. Think about the farmers and the processors that you're supporting when you use it. So the castor beans are grown and processed in a very special way, which means crushing the beans in a press to turn them into a thick paste. And then this paste is boiled. Almost all castor oil beans are boiled to get some poisonous compounds to be separated out.
The ricin, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's you don't want that in there.
No,
so all castor beans have to go through that.
Now, if they were using it to make like a laundry detergent, they would just leave that in there. Like, no.
Well, I don't know because typically with Jamaican black castor oil, it's done over an open fire hours to extract the crude castor oil.
Gotcha.
And that's why Jamaican black castor oil can have a smoky smell if it's not refined. Sometimes it really, really stinks. And that is just from the processing. It has nothing to do with beneficial compounds being present because that's done to remove the compounds that are poisonous that you don't want in there.
Right.
So you definitely want a supplier who's refining it. But then it goes through a second boiling step where water's again added to get more oil off of it. And then the paste that's left over is used for briquettes, kind of like charcoal briquettes.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then the oil is further processed to get everything out of it because it still has different things in it at that point. And then they further refine it to separate it into its various grades that are present. So that is Jamaican black castor oil. And the methods they're using have been around for generations and generations. So that's pretty cool. But does it really make your hair grow? Perry, what do you think?
I don't think so. If it was that easy to make your hair grow, this would be everywhere and some pharmaceutical company would be selling it. So I think it's just going to be something that has been traditionally done but has never been proven, you know, under rigorous conditions to show that it actually works any more than anecdotal evidence.
Yeah. There are not studies that indicate it grows, but I think really where this comes from is the benefit of any oil being applied to your scalp or to your hair, because oil acts as a lubricant and a lot of people suffer from hair loss due to breakage. And so it's not that castor oil grows your hair back. What I think it's doing is preventing breakage and it's allowing the hair that you have to grow because it's not breaking off. So that's where I think castor oil provides a benefit. I think you could get that from any oil. I think castor oil can sometimes be a little heavy and your hair type might not tolerate it.
That can also make your hair feel like it's thicker if it's got a heavy oil on it too. So.
Yeah, yeah. So I recommend trying it, but really I think you can use any oil that you really love for your hair and skin type and probably see some benefit of reduced hair breakage. And if you want to try castor oil and you want to support communities truly at the level where the crop's being harvested and processed for raw material suppliers, you're doing that too. But you're probably doing that with most oils.
All right. You know, I will add to that, Valerie, that I did see peppermint oil can stimulate hair follicles many years ago. I've never seen any follow-up research on that, so that might have been just some anomaly that never really panned out. But I know peppermint oil theoretically could have some hair growth potential. I just don't really buy that it's going to do anything more than anecdotal evidence.
No, and I think the trick with argan, jojoba, marula, again, is the fact that it's an oil and it's lubricating the hair shaft and preventing it from breaking.
Exactly. Well, it looks like we had time for one more question. This comes to us from Shannon. She asks, "Hi, I love your show and I love all the answers you give that are rooted in science that makes me understand how things work more. My question would be for Valerie." Oh, this is personally called you out, Valerie. "As a hairstylist, I love knowing how things work chemically and not just the marketing explanation that the company gives. I would like to know exactly how the Goldwell Illumin technology works. I know it's not like regular permanent dyes, but when I try to research it, I get company marketing answer and not the actual science. So is there any insight that you can give on this?"
Sure thing. So Goldwell has a hair color brand called Illumin, and they tout it as this ammonia-free, no ammonia-like smell, peroxide-free hair color. And those things are important to consumers because consumers generally don't like the smell of ammonia, although I do. And that's how I knew I was meant to be a hair color chemist.
Indeed.
But also these things are perceived to be damaging to hair. What is interesting is they also tout it as an alternative for clients with allergic reactions to oxidative color, which is a reality because some people can be allergic to certain hair dyes and oxidative color, which means color that has hydrogen peroxide. But people can also be allergic to direct dyes, and that's what the Goldwell Illumin system is based on. It's based on direct dye technology. So more specifically, it's based on direct dyes called acid dyes, and it's just one category of direct dyes that are really, really affinitive for hair, and they use other ingredients in the formula to help them penetrate into hair.
So they're not the trippy kind of dyes, right? Trippy acid dyes?
No, that'd be cool, though. So direct dyes are dyes you can directly see the color of. So when you open a tube of traditional permanent hair color, it's probably not going to have a color to it because you need hydrogen peroxide to catalyze a reaction and put those dyes together. With direct dyes, because you directly see the color, that color can penetrate into the hair shaft, provided it's in the right formula with things to help it penetrate in there. They have really fun colors, they have really natural colors, and those come just from mixing different combinations of all these dyes together that they have. And it's also why you don't need hydrogen peroxide for it. So Illumin is correct in that it doesn't work like regular permanent dyes. It probably provides less damage because you're not using ammonia or monoethanolamine, known as MEA, or hydrogen peroxide, which can be damaging to the hair fiber. But you also may be limited in longevity, evenness of root to tip, and that's just based on the way these hair color chemistries work. And Perry, coincidentally, if you wanted to learn more about hair color technology, I'm giving a talk.
What?
In next week for the Society of Cosmetic Chemists in California.
Wow.
It's the same talk I won an award for in Connecticut. And I'm also doing the talk in February for the IFSCC, which is going to be a virtual talk. So,
well, I will join you for that one. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Are listeners able to register for that event?
They are. I will be sure to put a link in the show notes in an upcoming show. Yeah.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
So I'll actually be talking about how acid dye chemistry and direct dye chemistry works in that talk. You know, I won't necessarily be mentioning brands or anything like
sure.
that, but you know, that this is exactly how the Goldwell Lumen technology works. It's also how many other, you know, punky color dye technologies work, like Manic Panic. It's really just about these direct dyes that you can see the color and they're penetrating into the hair shaft. So
now I have two questions for you. One is, using this technology, does that limit your color choices?
I think it limits not necessarily the color choices, because you can make a lot of colors with these direct dyes, but I think it limits the range of looks that you can do, because one of the advantages of permanent hair color is that it really penetrates into the hair fiber, whereas acid dyes can penetrate, but they typically rely on ionic interactions with the hair fiber to stay.
Okay.
So eventually those will get loosened and the dyes will wash away. The other benefit to permanent hair color is they contain ammonia and the hydrogen peroxide, or monoethanolamine and hydrogen peroxide. And that helps bump your natural hair color up a little bit to erase some of your dominant pigment before the color is implanted on. So you can get a little bit more brighter dimensional looks, maybe do some highlights with permanent color, whereas with Goldwell Lumen, your hair would have to be within some sort of range to get the result that you're looking for, I believe.
And then one other question. Is this technology special to them, or is this technology anybody could use? Like L'Oreal could come out with a line with this technology.
They may have some patents on the space of using specific acid dyes, but this technology is so old, I highly doubt it.
Okay.
They do have patents on some dyes that they co-developed with, I believe it was Kodak, a while back, where they have actually done the research to safely bring these dyes to market. And so those may be patented. Like, I know they have like a yellow and stuff like that. Yeah. So pretty much like many companies are already doing this. They're just not positioning it as a permanent hair color line.
Right. Well, very interesting. It's always interesting to hear about hair color from the expert. You know what else is always good to hear from the experts? Is that music. Do you hear it, Valerie?
That means we're out of time, right, Perry?
It is. Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for listening.
Oh, jinx. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone.
Hey, everyone. The Beauty Brains are on Patreon. If you want to help support the show and keep us advertising free, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe.
If you also get a chance, you can head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to the show and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And we prefer positive reviews, of course. So I can't always read the reviews, because if I get, you know, I spiral into a depression if I see something negative. Oh, boy. Well, and if you have a question, just record it on your smartphone and email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. Now, we do prioritize questions from patrons, but we also like the audio questions.
Also, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. And we have a Facebook page and a TikTok account.
At some point, we'll do something on that. Exactly.
Well, thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone. Kittens.